Hello, everybody, and welcome back to yet another Science Studio. This is Keith Pannell, and today we've got a special program, special in the sense that this is an election year, not the election you're thinking of. It's the election for the president of the American Chemical Society. Both Russell, who is here with me in the studio today, and I are both members of the ACS. It's the world's largest scientific organization, as far as I know, something like 170,000 members worldwide. But every year we have an election to see who's going to be the next president. And quite often that becomes a choice between a person in industry or a person in government or a person in university. This year, we're all birds of the same feather. We're all academics, and we've got two candidates. The first is Peter Dorhout. He's at Kansas State University. And the second is Tom Gilbert, who's at Northeastern University. And these are the two candidates that the membership will vote for. And so, therefore, we're going to start the program by allowing each of them to introduce themselves in their own words, and then we'll go on from there. So, Peter, alphabetically, why don't we start with you?
Thank you very much, Keith and Russ. It's great to be part of Science Studio. Thanks for inviting both of us on today. My name's Peter Dorhout, and I'm at Kansas State University, where I serve currently as the Vice President for Research. I came to Kansas State University a little more than 4 years ago to be the Dean of Arts and Sciences from Colorado State University, where I'd served as a faculty member, Associate Dean of Arts and Sciences, and the Assistant Vice President for Research, as well as the Dean of the Graduate School. So I'd served there for 20 years before coming to Kansas State University. I'm really excited about the opportunity to serve the American Chemical Society in a new role. I grew up as a professional in ACS, and I've learned how to lead volunteer organizations at the local and national level, and local sections and divisions and committees like the Younger Chemist Committee, divisional activities, and international activities, among a number. And I've also, like Tom, served on the board of directors for a term. I've really appreciated the opportunity to serve ACS. I know it sounds a little bit corny, but I'm very passionate about the American Chemical Society.
Thanks, Peter. And Tom, do you want to have your introductory statement?
Sure, thank you. All right, well, thank you very much, Russ and Keith, for organizing this conversation. Frankly, we're two people on the other end of the line who've known each other for quite a while, since, as Peter just mentioned, we've both been involved in ACS for quite a long time. And in terms of my background, I'm a native of a farm country upstate New York, went to Clarkson College of Technology for my undergraduate degree and MIT for a PhD in analytical chemistry, and I fell in love with Boston and decided to hang around, first as a researcher at an organization called the New England Aquarium, and after 10 years of fun on the water, began a career at Northeastern University, where I've been ever since. I'm on the faculty. I've had some academic experience supplemented by some administrative appointments, originally in an organization called the Barnett Institute for Chemical Analysis and Material Science. That led to acting as the associate dean and acting dean of our School of Education as my interest shifted a bit from traditional chemistry to chemical education. And most recently, as the academic director of our professional science master's programs in biotechnology. So, as I said, I've been involved with ACS for quite a while, served as a member of the council, served as a member of the board of directors, served on umpteen committees and task forces over the years with leadership roles in most of them. And I've gotten to know ACS inside and out pretty well. I appreciate the many things that ACS does and does well, although I still believe there are some things that ACS can and should do better and will do better, I hope, if I am elected. So that'll become a part of the conversation that we have after this, I believe.
Maybe that's a good place to start and to say, what do each of you think of as the challenges, not only to the American Chemical Society, but to the profession of chemistry in the United States? Because, I mean, I see things that I think we've got problems with, but I'm not running. So let's start again with Peter. Where do you see the issues that mainly concern you for the future of...
Or your vision.
Okay. I'm really concerned about the job situation in the United States. I've been serving on a task force with a number of other folks that was set up by Donna Nelson, the current ACS president, to explore the employment situation. And one of the biggest concerns that I have is that there is an unemployment gap between the average ACS member and students who are recently graduated and coming out into the workforce. Specifically, the unemployment among chemists this past year is just about 4%. And historically, that's a number that's ranged between 2 and 4%. It waxes and wanes as the economy waxes and wanes. And again, historically, new graduates have often trailed that by a few percentage points. But given the last recession, the unemployment for newly minted chemists of all degree levels has grown steadily and peaked just over 14%. It's not recovered. And so the unemployment among newly minted chemists is about 14% still. And that's a 10 percentage point gap that I fear negatively affects the profession of chemistry.
Can you give a reason for that?
Well, part of that, I believe, is that the manufacturing sector in the United States has changed significantly in the last 10 years. We've seen a 30% decline in manufacturing here in the U.S., and that's from an industry perspective. That's where a lot of bachelors and masters and as well as PhD chemists find their first jobs. And I believe that one of the challenges that we have in academics is to fully understand what the needs are among our industries, from the large chemical companies to smaller specialty companies to the very small startups that are emerging all over this country.
You think it has anything to do with our trade policies?
I think it could have relationship to trade and our relationships with international partners. It's not the first time we've seen jobs moving on and off our shores, and it's a bit of a function of the way chemical industry is going.
We're going to follow up on this because there's all sorts of issues that come from there. But Tom, how do you see the ACS having issues today that need to be addressed?
Well, certainly Peter has picked up on one of them, which is a concern to all of us, and that is the employment picture. And it is soft when it comes to especially the younger chemists who are just coming out and looking for jobs in the workforce. I think that the one thing that I find fascinating by the problems that we're having is that if you take a look at some companies who are growing and are indeed hiring, you find that very often positions in those companies go unfilled for a lack of finding the qualified candidates. And so, to me, I think we do have an issue in this country that needs to be addressed, and ACS is in a very good position to do it. And it has to do with making sure that the preparation, the education, and the knowledge and the skills that are being acquired by the students in our undergraduate and graduate programs is essentially preparing them for the jobs that exist and that are likely to exist in the future. I think, and Peter alluded to this, there can be a mismatch. I think that especially at the graduate level, in fact, there was a study done a few years ago by a presidential commission of the ACS that pointed to the fact that there are at least some parts of our educational system that seem intent on preparing people for jobs that no longer exist. I think we really do need to make sure that the kinds of educational experiences that our students are having really matches up well with where the chemical sciences are growing, and they aren't in the traditional places.
Well, that's actually, yes, a point I think we can all get to, is in the sense that we tend to think of chemistry as the central science, all right? And therefore, we tend to think that chemists can, in fact, jump in many different directions than, for example, physicists. And I remember going to a meeting that was put on by NIH recently, and they had a subsection of this meeting which was nothing more than saying alternative careers for PhDs. And they had a fellow from the pharmaceutical industry came and talked to us and started straight out by saying how big his company were, how wonderful their products were, but they no longer have a laboratory in North America. All of their research and development in the laboratory was done in China, and they think that only thought processes they were doing in Massachusetts. And I'd like either of you to jump in and say, well, that's the way of the future, or is that something that we should try to ameliorate by not permitting that to happen, perhaps?
Can I take a shot at that only because...
Yeah, this is Tom then, right?
This is Tom. Yeah. Well, you mentioned my home state of Massachusetts there a second ago as being a location that at least one pharmaceutical company has decided is a good place to invest some of their R&D capital. In fact, the northeastern section, which is based essentially in Boston and its metropolitan area, has seen a significant increase over the last decade or so in number of members from the ACS who are in this section. And a huge part of that is because there has been a concentration of R&D effort, particularly in biopharmaceutical and biotech industries, in eastern Massachusetts and southern New Hampshire and places not very far from the epicenter in Boston and Cambridge. So certainly some companies, international companies, as a matter of fact, are finding it worthwhile to invest their R&D capital in the U.S., Now, the manufacturing side is another story. Although, you know, with the current situation with the cost of starting materials, we're seeing chemistry plants being built for the first time in quite a while as the cost of natural gas as a feedstock for those plants has come down significantly and, in fact, is lower in the U.S. than in most other parts of the world.
Well, in fact, that's it. If I could interject, just this morning, I heard on the radio that Shell are investing a phenomenal amount of money just outside of Pittsburgh, using access to really cheap ethane as part of the fracking process that's going on all over. So,
well, exactly, and that is having an impact on essentially creating a bit of a renaissance in chemical plant production and presumably in manufacturing stemming from that. So there is at least a prospect of a somewhat brighter immediate future for the chemical enterprise in the U.S., and I certainly hope that it does have an impact on the employment picture for chemists of all ages, but certainly for the younger ones as well.
Peter, do you have any comments to follow up on what Tom was just saying or on the question in general?
Certainly. Thanks very much. And like as Tom mentioned, there are a number of new ventures that are popping up all over the country. I was down in Houston earlier this year and was talking with folks at Johnson & Johnson who are opening up in an old Nabisco plant, by the way, opening up incubator spaces and are bringing in smaller new companies and relying on a lot of central instrumentation and other sorts of infrastructure support. That's all part of a renaissance for industry. Obviously, they're very focused, and they're very focused on what Johnson & Johnson is interested in. But there are these sorts of things happening not just in Houston and Pittsburgh and Boston, but Kansas City area as well. If I can go back to one comment, I don't know whether it was Russ or Keith that mentioned alternative careers for chemists, and I'd like to change our vocabulary a little bit. Tom mentioned that he's heading up a program in the Professional Science Masters. There are a number of ways in which academics is now starting to change how it trains its students. And we have to think about careers that chemists have that span a spectrum. that the alternative may be, in the not-too-distant future, the alternative career may be an academic career or a traditional industry career. So I'd like us to change the way we talk about careers for chemists and set aside the alternative, because I think the future is such that the discipline will take on a number of different flavors, all that have to do with being able to use the logical parts of our brains and the creative parts of our brains to address critical problems with a host of different folks from lots of different backgrounds. And so if I can do one thing as ACS president, it's to get us to stop using the term alternative careers.
Okay. I'll pass that on to the National Institutes of Health. We're going to take a break here. You're listening to Science Studio. My name is Keith Pannell, here with Russ Chianelli, and we're talking with Peter Dorhout from Kansas State University, Tom Gilbert from Northeastern University, two candidates for the presidency of the ACS. We'll be back in 1 minute. Welcome back to Science Studio. Keith Pannell, Russ Chianelli, Peter Dorhout from Kansas State University, and Tom Gilbert from Northeastern, and the last two are candidates for the presidency of the American Chemical Society. Before we leave that business of training people for jobs that are there and rethinking the way we talk about jobs, there's one aspect that always fascinates me. I'm not sure if that's the right word. I give lots of talks at different universities, as you both do, and so does Russell. The number of foreign students studying PhDs in this country is very, very, very high. And a lot of the new faculty members are being coming from that same source. Do you see that as purely the advantage, which I think it is in North America, that we get this input of people from all over the world with different ideas and energy levels? Or do you think that there's some issue that says perhaps we should be not producing as many PhDs because the realms of postdoctoral fellowships, that's a large number of people these days, and I worry about that.
Well, this is Peter. I'll take a stab at that initially. I want to clarify one thing. If you look at the survey of earned doctorates that is published each year by the National Science Foundation, roughly 10 years ago, we had about 2,000 PhDs that were granted in chemistry, and 40% of those PhDs were awarded to temporary visa holders. The last data point for the National Science Foundation study had 2,600 PhDs that were granted. 37% of those were to temporary visa holders. So while the absolute numbers have gone up, the percentage has not, and in fact, it's gone down in terms of the percent of international students receiving a PhD. That's one point I'd like to make in terms of those data. I believe, though, that the approach to problem solving, global problem solving, requires real diversity of thought. And one group of folks, one nation, doesn't have the market cornered on creative thought. Some of the most creative teams that I've worked with bring in points of view that are culturally different than mine, and whether it's from different genders, different backgrounds, different ethnicities or races, different nationalities, I think it's critical to global problem solving. So there is tremendous value in having a diverse graduate student pool, notwithstanding the fact that we, at this point, still have an employment gap that we need to address.
Tom?
Well, I find myself in agreement with the basic, I think, message that was in Peter's statement just then. You know, the United States has what many people, I think, believe, certainly in the sciences, I think in chemistry, a really robust graduate program across the country in many places. And as a result, we simply attract students from around the world to come here to do their advanced preparation for careers in the sciences and especially in chemistry. So I agree completely with the notion that that is a positive, that that is something that essentially allows the United States to tap the best and the brightest from around the world, especially to the extent that these young individuals decide to stick around to pursue their careers in the U.S. Now, of course, I think in recent years, the percentage of those who have been returning to their home countries has perhaps been going up a bit more than in the older days, because now there are more R&D possibilities in other places. But I think that we are the beneficiaries, in fact, of this infusion of talent and hard work. And if you just take a look at the startup companies that are in lots of places around the country, and especially in those centers where, you know, entrepreneurship and ingenuity seem to be on fullest display. I'm thinking of, you know, Research Triangle and the area around South San Francisco and the Bay Area, and certainly around Boston and Cambridge. Those are places where, you know, it's like a mini UN. I mean, there are people from all over the world working together side by side, doing amazingly creative things. So I don't see that as a problem. I see that as actually something that we need to exploit to our benefit.
It's nice to hear you both sort of agree to that, because I think you're both right on. But you brought up entrepreneurship just now, I think it was Tom. And I'd like to sort of throw over to Russ to wax a little bit up on how we improve the interactions between industry and academe.
Yeah, I'd like to start off by saying that half my career was with Exxon Research and Engineering in New Jersey, and then it's a long story. I wound up here as an academic. And one thing is very clear to me that I do with the students here after having both sides of the story. I always tell them, and this is the first part of it, I said, look, nobody ever got it promoted at Exxon by taking a test. What they had to do was talk and write and convince. So my classes are around that, where I give them a subject or they pick a subject, and they have to present it to the students. The other thing I tell them, and I'd like to have your comments about it, is that I do a lot of theory, synthesis, characterization, and then make it real, commercialization, startups, and so on. And so I always ask the students, you want to think about your research, the value of it to the people out there that are paying for it.
I think you've made a very valid point. The whole notion, if you're talking about students, especially graduate students, you know, preparing for the real world, they need to be working on projects that are important work. I think actually George Whitesides has made this comment in some public presentations in recent times. There is a need, I think, to take a look at the kind of experiences the students are having, especially in our graduate programs, just to make sure that what they're deeply involved in during those formative years is something that is going to translate sooner or later into something important for society. And, you know, they cannot be involved in, you know, creating the 23rd in a series of papers on a particular esoteric line of research that probably has very little marketable value or, you know, importance to society. So the notion of authentic problem solving with important problems as the target, I think, is a key part of creating graduate experiences, especially that.
Well, can I interject? Does that mean that the ACS, under your leadership, and Peter, you can make comments too, would sort of be addressing National Science Foundation, NIH, for more directed research and less fundamental research?
Not so much directed versus or applied versus fundamental, but the notion of tackling important problems, which I think is a bit different topic.
Okay.
It's not meant to be something which is eminently commercial, as something which has an impact.
Peter, could you make a comment? Because we've got to get off the air pretty soon.
Certainly. It's hard to argue with anything Tom says, but I'll simply add that recently, as recent as April, the NSF Division of Chemistry announced that it will actually provide to the PIs that are holding grants that are supporting graduate students an internship for those graduate students, an internship opportunity. So they're paid to go into, could be a large chemical industry, could be a small chemical business, but it's an opportunity to get graduate students engaged. And so I think NSF's heading in the right direction, but I believe that there's more that they can do. Where universities can take in a role, and Tom knows this and has done this as well, having entrepreneurship or intellectual property management become ingrained within the graduate student or the undergraduate student experience, I think will add a tremendous value to their education. And speaking of value, not every university values intellectual property management. It doesn't necessarily value the patent as much as a peer-reviewed journal article in JAX, for example. This is where I think we need to change the coin of the realm and make it okay for intellectual property to become part of the promotion and tenure process in academics. And that's something that I think ACS can speak to.
Okay. Well, look, we've come essentially to the end. It's clear to me, and Russell, I think also, that we're lucky to have two excellent candidates. And gentlemen, thank you so much for being here. I how this plays into the great scheme of things and whether the ACS will go in a different direction. But it is always humbling for you to go and talk to some of your colleagues that don't know who you are particularly and ask them, who is the current president of the ACS? And you'll find a large number of ACS members haven't got a clue.
Indeed, Keith. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be on Science Studio.
So anyway, look, thank you very much, Peter Dorhout from Kansas State and Tom Gilbert from Northeastern Universities, two fine chemists. Good luck to both of you. Bye-bye.